gong de gong de gong 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 diggy diggy. Gimme the gong 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 de gong de gong. You know, you took me by surprise, Googs.
Really?
This is the sound of Admiral alongside Jaseed, yeah, my brother. From 1997, you really took me by surprise.
Yeah.
And this really was the big track off. I did two albums, yeah, like solo albums. This is the big track. It was the single track, yeah, from back then in 97.
Yeah.
Admiral and Jaseed doing a crossover ragga, yes, dancehall meets Kwaito. And, you know, Peter in your studio is quite correct. Kalawa were involved in the production,
yeah,
because of the Kalawa guys, Bruce Dope, Skizo, and of course Jaseed from Bongo Muffin. So, I mean, this is my crew, you know?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the production came about at the time. So thank you for playing that.
It's like this beautiful love child. You can hear there's like very strong Kwaito. It's like a Trompie song. It keeps making me think of the beat, but also the ragga as well. It's like this beautiful, like, love child.
Right, now I've got to pick you up here, Googs, because you're saying it's beautiful, but now we've been discussing with Comfort, your producer, how much you dislike ragga and dancehall. So I'm glad to see we're already winning you over.
Yeah, and you know what? I want to like ragga. I just don't know what happened. It just didn't happen for me.
Music's music. If you feel it, you feel it.
I have no, but in my heart of hearts, I want to like it.
Okay. Well, next time we play, which might be soon, then we invite you and bring you down. And I guarantee you, when you're standing in our crowd and the speakers are twice your height,
yeah,
and they are infusing you with that deep bass and the sweet sounds in the tops and the mids,
yeah,
I guarantee you'll be converted.
Really?
I guarantee it.
Okay. I believe you.
Challenge is on.
Challenge is on, and I believe you. We're joined in studio by Andy Casserles, the Admiral. He is, you do many things, a radio host, a film and TV critic, a writer and producer, and a raga aficionado. Many things.
Thank you for, I'd never heard this term, multi-hyphenate.
Yeah.
I take it that that's a positive thing.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right. Okay, good.
It's a very good
thing. Are you one?
I think so. TV, radio. Yeah, I guess so. Okay. Yeah.
As long as you do more than two things.
There are hyphens involved.
All right. Gotcha.
Yeah. And so thank you for coming in. Also, I have a question before we start. Is it reggae or ragga? Or are those two very different things? In the same way, Afrobeat and Afrobeats are two very different things.
You know, are they?
Yes, and people get, people, it's a very specific thing. So, Fela.
Yeah.
Fela did Afrobeat.
Oh, original Afrobeat. You're talking, yes, about the 1970s.
Yes, and the likes of Tiwa Savage, okay, etc. Okay. They do Afrobeats.
All right, I didn't see a distinction. So, in fact, you know what? I can compare the two.
Okay.
Because everything is reggae. If you're into dancehall, ragga, whatever it is, it's all reggae, right? It's all the music from Jamaica.
Yes.
That originated in Jamaica. You know the history of reggae and how it's also spawned subcultures and genres around the world, mm-hmm, right? But similarly, what happened with reggae was you had classic reggae. So if you want to speak about the biggest artists, you're going to talk about Bob Marley or whoever, yes, it is, right? And then just like everywhere in the world, with the advent of digital technology in the 1980s, the music became digital. Suddenly you had people making music in smaller surroundings using keyboards, mm-hmm, Cubase, sequencing programs, whatever, drum boxes and the like. And the music evolved because of this new technology in a certain direction. And particularly the lyrical side, like what you would call the rapping,
yeah,
the DJ side of reggae, the dancehall music, actually a term got coined in the late 1980s, ragga. And it's actually a UK description for dancehall music that was really about the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah.
But it stuck. When you say ragga, people know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Ragga is dancehall music, reggae music played in the dance halls, played in the big clubs, played on the streets. and dancehall is reggae. It's all one thing. Similarly with your Afrobeat, I think it worked the same way.
Right.
You know, the original Afrobeat, high life, whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
evolving into today what we globally call Afrobeat.
Right. And so do you then meet Raga when you are living in the UK? Because you were born in exile.
That's right. Yes, I was. So, in how I came to know it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. So, for me, it was like in my mid to late teens. I just actually, way back then, there was a very, I mean, people know what dub reggae is, instrumental reggae that's mixed. It kind of in a way that has led to, you know, what you hear in Deep House. So dub music was big, roots reggae was big, and I got into it at that point, and that was just on the cusp around 1980 or so,
yeah,
where there was this transformation in the music where really the dancehall culture evolved, and that phase was known as rubber-dub. And that's where I got into it. Artists like Yellow Man, for example, if you've ever heard of him, big dancehall artist, yeah, that era is when I got into it. And so, yeah, that's where I was in the 1980s, and that's how I got into the music. And I found it fascinating that one bus ride away from where I grew up, there's this area, big Jamaican community living there, and there's these dance halls taking place. There's these sound systems. It was very different to the area I grew up in. Pounding this reggae music and this atmosphere it created, I just found it fascinating.
Yeah.
And I was drawn to that. So that's how I got into the ragga.
Because that was going to be my question. Why that particular genre? How did that? Because again, like you say, it is this Caribbean genre that's traveled all over the world.
Mm.
You find it in the UK. And why that one? Because it could have been, you know, any other genre.
It could have. So once a year in West London, there's this famous Notting Hill Carnival. And when I was growing up, I would go to that when I was getting into reggae. And it was just the atmosphere and the culture of this thing that drew me into it. And it was very much the London dancehall style, the London reggae style.
Yeah.
And as you know, those areas in London have huge Caribbean communities. Now, what's interesting is that since I've been in South Africa, since the 90s, London has changed as well. And now many of the areas that I was frequenting and hanging out in with my friends when I was growing up, those areas are now African dominated, particularly West African, second generation dominated. So there's now where there was big Jamaican communities,
yeah,
some of them still there, some of them have moved to other parts of the UK, whatever. There's now, as it were, expat Nigerian.
Yeah.
And so the spread of Afrobeat now in a place like London is very easy because all those families are playing it. People from Nigeria are playing it. The British neighbors next door, their kids are hearing it growing up.
Yeah.
And now it's part of their culture in the same way that reggae spread in the era that I was growing up.
Yeah.
Mm.
And for you, growing up in exile,
yeah,
how did your parents frame of being in exile? Was it that this is home for now, but home is really South Africa? Or was that this is home? Was there ever conversation about eventually we'll go back home?
In my case, no. Me, my brother, we kind of grew up as London kids. We were born there. But our family was South African. Mm-hmm. And so it was more like, to answer your question, as we were growing up, it was explained to us, this is why mum and dad are here.
Yeah.
This is, we were, because they were exiled,
yes,
right? And we are members of the ANC. And aside of that, then there's this kind of ANC exile community in London. So while on the one hand we're living a typical London life, friends at school, all the rest of it, there's also this, you know, all these interesting uncles and aunties that we have as in our family, in quotation marks,
yes,
who are also all the ANC exiles who were in London. So it wasn't as if we ever, it's strange because when you're that young, is particularly when you're under 10, you're not really thinking about anything like, okay, what's coming in the future? You're just kind of growing up, right?
Yeah.
It was only really in the teenage, in the 1980s, especially during, you know, the kind of rise of the UDF, Young Lion generation, all of that, that I think it became tangible.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
And so how old were you when you and your family returned to South Africa?
Well, we returned at different times, right? So I worked in the ANC as a full-time functionary in the UK. And I'd volunteered and spent a couple of years in Angola. I'm an MK veteran.
Really?
Yeah.
And a real MK veteran.
I was there.
You were actually there.
If there's such a thing as a real, yes, a real one. I know why you're saying that. And yes, I was. I was there 87, 88. I went there when I was 21. And then when the ANC was unbanned, I came for a visit to check the place out. I mean, I've been very interested because my life was centered around it. To cut a long story short, you know, one thing led to another. I was offered a job around 94 and I came and I've been here ever since.
Really? Mm. How many people are still surprised to know who your father is?
You know, there was that phase, there was that time where it's like, especially in the ANC, you can imagine, right? Oh, this is ANC Khumalo's son. That's his name in the ANC.
Right.
This is Ronnie Kadril's son. Yeah. And there was a moment many years ago now where I think there was something I was doing with Jaseed. It was either a track we had out, it was either an appearance or a show or something, where it came out, whatever the publication was, it was like, yeah, and it was the other way around. It's not, this is so-and-so's son. It's like, did you know he is Admiral's father? And yeah, that was a good moment of independence for me to be known as that.
Not Ronnie and Eleanor's son.
But that's actually his parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was nice for the youth.
Yeah.
You know?
So you come back to South Africa, it's the early 90s, it's a completely different country, and obviously music, media is about to go through this very interesting phase. YFM happens, which is its own thing, it's like a completely new thing, and you know, for me, growing up in Joburg, it was so exciting because I think I was 10 when YFM came out.
Oh, wow.
So it was perfect. It was kind of one of the reasons I ended up in media was suddenly there was this thing that didn't sound like anything. And so how do you end up, you know, having functioned in essentially Umbuto to ending up in radio? How does that happen?
Yeah, so there you go. There's the twin story because, as I said, you know, from 16, 17 years old, being really into the reggae and aspiring to be an artist amongst my friends in London who had a sound system and all of that. So that's going on. Early 90s in London, I qualified and worked as a sound engineer. So I was working on productions of music and so forth. And with a very famous former political prisoner, Robert McBride, with the anti-apartheid movement in London, we produced for the 94 elections a commemorative CD, Voter Education / Vote for ANC at the time. That's what we did, right? So coming back and working here as I was deployed in the beginning, having been former MK ANC member, deployed in government, and I worked in foreign affairs. On the weekends, a friend of mine, a very good friend, Sbu Nwumalo, the general, as I called him, he had a show on a station called Voice of Soweto.
Mm-hmm.
And he did the reggae show on Saturday afternoons, and he couldn't make it one day. And he said to me, you've got loads of reggae CDs, Andy, come do the show while I'm away. I did it. He loved the results. And we then co-hosted on Voice of Soweto for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it was YFM when they were setting up that we had discussions with about doing a reggae show. And on my Voice of Soweto show, that's where I had met Jaseed, who was drawn to come and visit the show. And so we were already forming kind of like a little bit of a crew and starting to DJ in places, particularly Yeovil at the time.
Yeah.
And then YFM was formed. And then with YFM being in Bertram's, many of the DJs used to come to our club while we were playing. From there, it was just fairly easy to get a slot.
Yeah.
And Oscar Oskido, very kindly, who was doing a show with Rude Boy Paul at the time, they gave up the last hour of their show for myself and Jarcid to play 1 hour dancehall without even talking on the mic.
Just a mix.
It was the tester. And it went very well. And then that morphed into Rag Attack, which was the name of our show. And that's how it started. So we started in 99.
Yeah. By then, had you chosen, I guess, your stage name, The Admiral?
The Admiral is a nickname that was bestowed upon me as a teenager.
Really?
By my MC teacher. He called me Admiral Andy because there was an alliteration. And, you know, in reggae, we're all about being militant. And so it's a military title as such. There's lots of colonels and generals and so on in reggae.
Yeah.
So that's where I had that name and I kept it.
Yeah.
And many of my old friends from that era are quite surprised to find, like, you know, the nickname stuck. And people in South Africa actually know, you know, Admiral, Admiral Andy.
Yeah.
Even down to the point where it's not Admiral Andy.
It's just the Admiral.
The Admiral, yeah. So that's nice. They like to hear that.
So you do this hour-long mix on YFM. And what was the response? It was, because South Africa was also going through quite an interesting time music-wise. Kwaito was having this really big moment.
Yep.
Hip-hop was still quite small, but there was something happening there with
Squatter
South African
camp
hip-hop.
And all of that,
There was something happening with South African hip-hop. And so what was the response to this sound on the wireless?
Like you're saying, Googs, you know, if you listen to, there were particular Kwaito groups at the time, and people used to say to me, you know, like, when you'd hear there's a ragga voice, like Bonga Muffin's the perfect example, right? There's a ragga voice in the group. There's a traditional African singer style voice in the group. There's a sort of quasi rap. Well, actually, Stone was local rap, but it's a blend.
And then
it's a mix. And then
Speedy was very R&B
style. And there were more examples of that. You think about a group like Scheme. I mean, the classic, I suppose, is Boom Shaka, the first, right? Mm. With these elements being mixed. And that showed that there was at least the public, the youth, were feeling a certain music style.
Yeah.
And so with what we were doing, me and Jarcid, it's like going to the roots of that style. That's so we're only doing that.
Yeah.
And the figures were good and it caught on.
Really? And you just, you know, as you say it, there's kind of, we had these groups that did a little bit of everything.
Mm.
Even
Abashanti is another.
Yeah, even a group like TKZ, kind of this like classical, you can hear, you know, this like classical piano.
Zwai's choral background.
And then, you know, there was Tukulo and Kabelo.
That's right.
And then later on Magesh, but still these like beautiful violins.
Yeah.
So there was this kind of, these hybrid sounds. It wasn't new at the time that, you know, there'd be a bit of ragga, a bit of kwaito, a bit of traditional.
And I think that firstly reflects South Africa and a newly forming youth culture post 94. And it also reflects globally. There was a lot of that going on in world music at the same time. So it was us doing our version of that here.
Mm. Your 702 Weekend Breakfast with me, Googs Mdlongo. We're still in our profile interview with multi-hyphenate Andy Casseroles, the Admiral, joining us in studio this morning. We were just chatting off air because, of course, we were listening to Eyewitness News Sport and I was asking what soccer team you support. It's Arsenal.
And Pirates.
Okay.
Yeah. Traditionally Pirates. I automatically became a Pirates supporter here.
Why?
My dad was supporting Pirates when I arrived. And it feels like a good match, Arsenal and Pirates. To me, it does. It's always worked. I like Pirates. I like the symbol. I like everything about them. Yeah.
Granted, I support Pirates because my gran supports Pirates. And I was raised by my grandmother. And it just seemed right. I've never supported anything else, and I'm thrilled you're a Pirates supporter because it was going to be the thing that determines how the rest of this interview goes. So,
once always, viva the Sea Robbers, and thank God we both support Pirates.
Right? So you come back to the country, you go into the business of radio, but then you also find yourself in the business of TV.
Yes.
In fact, earlier on, we were talking about the difficulty that the movie industry is finding itself in.
Stowe Kenny Corp having to retrench
just over 200 people, closing down some of their cineplexes. And you were actually a reviewer.
I was a reviewer. I had a lot to do with Prime Media, Stowe Kenny Corp at the time, because of the pre-screenings that we were reviewing while I was on the Fat Joe show on ETV and then SABC One. I heard what you were saying about the streaming. It's the debate. And of course, I have a movie on a streamer now, my first feature film, which is on Netflix, which I'm sure we'll talk about. This all came out of randomly being asked to come and review a movie on the brand new Fat Joe show, episode one.
Really?
Myself and I forget who the first reviewer was, somebody called Cutluano. And it went well at Red Pepper Pictures and the Fat Joe show, and Fat Joe, who was working at YFM at the time as well, he was the breakfast DJ, they said, "Hey, that was really good. Are you free next week?" And I said, "Yeah." And every week they said, "Are you free next week?" Until it was just like, "Well, you're working with us now."
Yeah.
You know. And then through that and through watching all these films, I'd always liked films. I really developed a love for cinema.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. So for quite a few years, Fat Joe Show reviewed movies for however long that was, 5-6 years.
Yeah.
Every week, and then I did some writing as well and reviewing, and then myself and my friend Akin Omotoso, we had a show for 2 years, I think, on what was then a new channel, Mzansi Magic.
Mm-hmm.
That was already now 2011, 2012. And it was around that time, reviewing with Akin especially, that I really felt like, you know, I want to make a film. I had made one short film in 2009, and I started writing, and that led to becoming a writer-director.
And so when you watch movies now, having watched them for, what did you say, 5 to 6 years?
Yeah,
to
I mean, for my them, life, but yeah, reviewing them, yeah.
Are you able to just watch a movie, or do you watch it kind of with a reviewer's eye, or is there no such thing?
So this is what's tricky. It's like if you're a musician, when you're listening to music, you're thinking, "Hey, that's a new sound. I haven't heard that in there before," right? So that it's like that. But the sign of a great movie, the sign of you're watching something special now, is when you forget and you're just drawn into the thing and you're in it.
Yeah.
And that happens every now and again, and that's a joy.
Yeah. Okay. And speaking of the movie you've just worked on, it came out last year.
August,
onto Netflix.
Mm.
We've actually got the trailer of that movie.
Upi upunzu nunu.
Why? Ufuna kumtsobola. Uzongifundisa ukusebenzisa umshini wami. Shini wami.
Namdikhona. Angishiki kulomsebenzi. Equal ndima, equal share.
Angishifuni ice cream asimphakela i-diabetes.
The temperatures are about to get sizzling hot.
So that's the trailer for Big Nunu's Little Heist.
Which I must interrupt and say, obviously there's visuals that make that a lot more understandable.
Yes.
Please continue, Googs, please.
It's a film that was released last year. It's on Netflix.
That's right.
Tell us about Big Nunu's Little Heist.
It's a heist comedy.
Okay.
And it's set in a fictional township in South Africa, where a delivery man who's delivering a stove to a tavern in this notorious township has it stolen during the delivery.
Oh.
And he tracks it down within the township, walking into the middle of a gang who are planning a heist.
Uh-huh.
And the rest is what happens next.
So a stove is stolen.
Mm-hmm.
His stove.
The one he's delivering on behalf of his company
right.
to a tavern.
And he,
he's a delivery man.
Right, right, right. And so he then tries to find the consignment.
He has to, yeah, at all costs, he has to get that back. Okay. And he's drawn into a big adventure.
Oh, wow.
And brilliantly played by an actor called Jefferson Shabalala. And his counterpartner, the gang boss, Upunsu Nunu,
mm-hmm.
is played by Tony Miyambo. And there are some fantastic actors, comedians, people like Kagiso Ladiga, Paw Pops, Celeste Ntuli, numerous other great actors who are part of this ensemble cast.
Yeah.
And it's a straight heist gone wrong comedy.
Yes. I love that the gang leader's name is Putsu Nunu.
Right. AKA Big Nunu.
Right.
Yes. Okay. And that's why you hear that rather effeminate mummy's boy voice.
Yes.
So he's the most dangerous guy in the hood.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Putsu Nunu.
Right. Which I find, you know, there is that kind of, what is that contradiction?
Exactly.
That you are, exactly. you know, you are the person, but everyone is terrified of you.
That's right.
So what was the experience of working on this film?
It was a fantastic experience. The first, I've always wanted to. It took a long time to get there. With the endeavors of my friend and mentor, Robbie Thorpe, producer, and Akino Motoso, and we were pushing and pushing. And to cut a very long story short, when Kagiso Ladiga read the script, his company, DePrente, then, who had made Queen Sono with Netflix,
yes.
then presented Big Nunu's Little Heist to Netflix. And really, it was just one read of the script, and they said, let's make this.
Sure.
And then it was the whirlwind of making it. We had to wait a little while because of COVID. So we shot the film ultimately in 2022,
mm-hmm.
Came out late 2023. It was a fantastic experience. I'm very pleased with our limited budget, with the fantastic results, and we've had an incredible response.
Yeah.
And it's great to direct a movie.
Do you think that the future of how we consume films is, you know, sort of through streaming? So it's not necessarily going to be in a cinema because before that was kind of how you saw this big production, a well-produced, big budget thing.
Mm.
Whereas now you can watch, you know, a pretty good film in a platform like Netflix is bringing sort of these very big budget things to the small screen. Do you think that's where we are?
It's,
or where we're going with how we consume films?
So there's no stopping it, and it's happened, right? When I wrote for cinema, and the whole idea was, let's try and make a film, let's try and pull people into the cinema, and times changed. By the time we got there, it's licensed to a streamer now for the next few years, right?
Yeah.
And co-produced by, right? So, or not technically co-produced, but anyway, it's a Netflix film, right? And DePrente produced it. So this is what's happened. The landscape for filmmakers was very difficult prior to this. If you look now, there are many films across the streamers and many series that have, there's a large amount of South African content.
Yeah.
Films and series.
Yeah.
So on the plus side, there's a lot of work for South African creatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
The difficulty with this, the cultural difficulty, is that it's become, you could say, a fragmented viewership, in the sense that in the old days, film or particularly TV, the whole nation watched at the whole same time together.
Yeah.
And of course, those days are gone because of the technology worldwide,
yeah.
right?
You can watch whenever you want.
So this is the landscape now. And it was just great to be able to get a deal with, another advantage for the streamer is that you're on there and anyone in the world at any time can check it out.
Yeah.
So there's a much wider viewership.
Mm. Let's go to Tembi from McLean Vista. Tembi, thank you very much for holding. Good morning.
Oh my goodness. Hi, Cooks. And hi, Andy.
Hi, Tembi.
Yo. It's like a voice from the past from me. Like, when you started talking, I was like, I know this voice. I know this voice. Where do I know? And then the face came to my mind. And I'm like, wow, Andy, what a fascinating life.
Thank you,
Cooks, for bringing him along.
It's only because I'm a Pirates fan that he agreed.
I don't want to talk about Pirates because we are at number 10.
Okay, we're not talking about Titiski.
but listen, man, I was just so fascinated to hear his life story, you know, from South Africa to London and back and et cetera, et cetera. It's extremely fascinating. And, well, I only know him from his movie critic work. But now that I get the inside story, wow.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Thanks for making my day.
Yeah,
thank you.
And good luck for all your ventures. I'll try and follow your work a bit more.
Please do. Either the music or watch Big Nunu's Little Heist. We'll see you
because
in the club.
I've always honestly enjoyed your movie critic work. And thank you, hey.
Thanks a
good
million.
Luck.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tembi.
Google, yes. Thanks for always giving us the best, eh?
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you so much for listening.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. That's Tembi in Glen Vista. Let's go to the west, to Roodepoort, where we have Rufus. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Rufus, a very good morning to you.
Yes, hi. Good morning, Boogs. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Awesome. Wow. What a fascinating interview, eh? Admiral, hello. How are you?
Rufus, big up. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so great to hear your voice again. I mean, big fan of yours. And I must say, your life story is so diverse, man. It's awesome to hear, you know, that you had so many adventures, eh?
And this is another one today. Yeah, man. Thanks, Rufus, man.
So I watched the movie, you know, Big Nunu's Little Heist, and I must say, it was very entertaining, eh? I would recommend it for anyone. I didn't know that you had anything to do with the production or anything.
Wow.
But we have a lot of great South African productions coming out on Netflix, on Showmax. And yeah, I just want to punt them. You know, if you have a chance, watch the movie. Big Nunu is, it's a hilarious, it's kind of a dream kind of movie.
Yeah.
But I would recommend it to for anyone to watch. It's good entertainment.
So you see, I just got a movie critic review by Rufus.
Yes.
My film has been reviewed by Rufus.
Yes.
Rufus, how many fat lips out of five? What do you give Big Nunu's Little Heist? Please tell us.
I will give them five.
Oh, wow.
What a day. What a day. Thank you.
Wow, what a throwback.
Back to
five fat lips. Wow. Okay, thank you guys. Awesome
show. Thank you so much, Rufus. I must watch it because I hadn't watched it yet. I must now because it's been independently reviewed by Rufus, who doesn't know you. Or maybe he does know you. I don't know. You told him.
No.
Call it the end of the, the future.
We just met live on the air, and there is nothing. There's no transactions. That was real.
Yeah.
That was real.
Would you ever go back to radio?
I left radio, it was, I guess, during COVID as the film approached.
Mm-hmm.
I love radio. I kind of envy what you do. Week in, week out, it's a great thing to do, especially if, in your case, the topics, I can tell, really interest you. You seem like a topical person, political, social type of person.
Yeah.
So I love being on air. It's great.
Would you ever do talk radio?
Who knows?
Yeah.
If the space was there, I would do it.
Really?
Is this a job interview?
No. Well, I don't know. My bosses are generally listening. It could be. An interesting message from someone that came in earlier. Sipo says, Googs, how come Andy speaks exactly like his father, Ronnie?
You think so? Because funny enough, right, I know why he's saying that, because people say we've got very similar mannerisms.
Okay.
And it's true. I've seen that at times, especially physically. My voice, I think, to a lot of South Africans, sounds very English.
Yes.
However, when I go back, people say, what's happened to your voice? Oi, what's happened to your voice, mate?
Oi.
So it has become this kind of quasi
accent, but it's nice to hear him say that.
Yeah, he says, could you act as your father in a movie or a documentary?
Wow, I would find it difficult. Honestly speaking, I find it difficult because I'd be very close to it.
Yeah.
And there actually is, at the moment, there is something in development based on one of his books.
Really?
Yeah, which is out in, you'll get that in places like Exclusives, about his growing up in Yeovil, but called Tadpoles. And there's also a play coming out about my mum's imprisonment and escape from detention, yeah, called The Unlikely Secret Agent, which is going to be opening very soon at the Market Theatre.
How exciting.
And so I urge people to go and check that out, written and directed by a great playwright called Erica Murray.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it opens in a couple of weeks' time. It's during May.
Oh,
during
wow.
May, yeah.
That's very exciting. Mm. So you mentioned that I need to come to one of your gigs soon.
Yep.
So still gigging. The music is still
the thing about the film writing and development is it takes a lot of time.
Mm.
And the thing about the DJing is that it's a late night thing. And having one show a week can actually take up like a day to 2 days of your time because it's work before the show and a late wake up.
Yeah.
So I'm very selective, but always open to it. And okay, me and Jas Seed are always ready for a show.
Really?
So, yeah. So when it's happening, I've got your number now.
Yes.
Okay. And the invite will come live on air. So there'll be no, you'll have to surrender and come.
There'll be no.
And you will be, you'll be accompanied by Comfort and my good friend on 702, Non Borta.
Oh, yay.
Who has come to our shows over the years. Yeah. She's one of our sisters.
Yeah.
Those two will drag you and you will have a great time.
I don't think they'll have to drag me. I may just need to ask them, like, which artist is this? And, you know, I'll be that annoying person. But I think
Shazam.
I'll be willing and, you know, it'd be great. Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Googs. Thank you to everyone who tuned in. Great hanging out on a Sunday. One love to everybody. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you very much. And that is our profile guest, the Admiral. Andy Casserole is joining us this morning. If you missed any part of our interview, we will have it up on primemediaplus.com.